Welcome to Book Notes, the Ohio Channel's conversation show where we look at Ohio authors and books about Ohio. For 25 years, Sharon Draper taught high school English before trying her hand at fiction writing. Nowadays, she authors books for children and teenagers, winning, among other accolades, the Coretta Scott King Award twice. Her book, Out of My Mind, was in the New York Times bestseller list for almost 2 years. And welcome, Sharon Draper, and thank you for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
So, 25 years in the classroom.
Yes.
When did you decide, you know what, instead of just teaching about writing, I'm going to become a writer myself?
Now, it would be really easy to say, on December 12th, I made the decision. I didn't. I've always been the person who encouraged my kids to write and to read and to love writing and love reading. And I know how to look at someone's writing and make it better. It hadn't even occurred to me to write something until I entered a short story contest. And that was done because a smart mouth student challenged me to do that. Why don't you write something sometime? And so I entered this contest and I actually won. I got first prize in a national writing contest. So it's like, well, gee, I can write as well as tell young people how to write. So that was kind of the impetus to start writing a book. I said, I think I can write a book, which is what every human on the face of the earth that has ever spoken to me has said. I think I can write a book. We all do. We all have a book inside of us. But I started working on the book. I wrote it during study hall, during lunch, before school, after school, and I knew that it was good. And so I sent it into 25 publishing companies. I got 24 rejections in a row. And the very last one was from Simon & Schuster that we want to publish your book. I said, I'm going to get a book published. And so it wasn't some grand plan. It happened because it was time, I think.
A lot of the writers have talked about that there's so much rejection you have to go through. And how do you just ignore that and just keep plowing on?
Well, I had nothing to lose. I wasn't an established anybody. It was when I got the rejections, it was like, okay, well, they just aren't smart enough yet. And when the yes finally came, it was from the most significant publishing company in New York. So it meant a lot to me. I didn't deal with the rejection because I had nothing to lose. Mm-hmm.
So you were a high school English teacher, right?
Yes.
So how much do you think of kind of in the front lines training prepared you for, like, I know what the kids are going to respond to?
I don't think I would have been as successful as a writer if I was not a teacher first. Because even though things have changed and every kid is now online and has an iPhone and is, you know, their world has changed, the way that they communicate with each other, but nothing has changed. When you're 12, you're worried about yourself, about what you look like, how you fit in. When you're 15, you're worried about, you know, your relationships with other people. Every single child has the same fears. I'm not good enough. I'm too tall. I'm too short. I'm too big. I'm too little. What a good writer does is think about, what does my reader need to read, rather than what do I need to say? Because that way I'm focusing on me rather than on my reader. So I try to think about my readers and say, what does this young person need to read? What would he like to read? What would really get one of those kids that I used to teach into a book to say, whoa, this is good? So you have to take yourself out of it and think about your reader.
So one of the things that I noticed in your work is there's a lot of dialogue. You're writing a lot of dialogue, and you have an ability to take each character and give them a voice. Dialogue and voice changes each generation.
Yes.
Where do you find that? Where do you find the authentic capture of that?
As young people change and their dialogue and their quote-unquote slang changes, the writer has to change to interpret that. I have a granddaughter who's 13 who told me the other day that her hair was on fleek. And I'm going, okay, I got to look that one up. And so their language changes. But as long as you capture the essence of what they're feeling, it's easy to figure out what words to use to express that. It's not the vocabulary. It's not the slang. It's the essence of their feelings. Young people like my books because, and they write to me and tell me this, you wrote exactly how I felt. You showed I used to be scared like that, and you wrote it down in a book. I was worried about this particular thing, and you wrote it down in a book. So the vocabulary is minor and can always be done at the very end with editing. The essence of the feelings and emotions of a young person is what captures the reader. I'm reading from chapter one of Out of My Mind. It's called Words. I'm surrounded by thousands of words, maybe millions. Words like cathedral, mayonnaise, pomegranate, Mississippi, Neapolitan, hippopotamus. Words have always swirled around me like snowflakes, each one delicate and different, each one melting untouched in my hands. Deep within me, words pile up in huge drifts, mountains of phrases and sentences and connected ideas. From the time I was really little, maybe just a few months old, words were like sweet, liquid gifts, and I drank them like lemonade. They made my jumbled thoughts and feelings have substance. My parents have always blanketed me with conversation. They chattered and babbled. They verbalized and vocalized. Every word my parents spoke to me or about me, I absorbed and kept and remembered. I have no idea how I untangled the complicated process of words and thought, but it happened quickly and naturally. By the time I was two, all my memories had words, all my words had meanings, but only in my head. I've never spoken one single word. I'm almost 11 years old.
You haven't really stepped that far away from the classroom. You spend a lot of your time on the road giving presentations to schools.
Yes.
And still, children are a very big part, students are a very big part of your life. I think about all of the technology that is competing with books right now. Can you speak to why a book, I'm not talking about a Kindle, but something that doesn't have an interactive game or doesn't have buttons, you have to like control something. Why the book is so important to American education?
I have found that young people, when given the choice, want to hold a book. Sometimes they will read an e-version of a text because it's easier, or it's easier to access, or it's quicker. But when given the chance, they like holding a book. And I've asked them, I said, okay, you know, high school kids, which do you choose? You know, if you had a choice between holding a stack of books in a machine or having that stack of books that you can feel and touch and smell, they still go for the books. I don't think we're going to lose books. Mm-hmm. I think that books are going to be side by side with the electronic version. Like, I don't think we're going to ever lose radio. Radio has existed side by side with television. When television came out, people said, oh my goodness, that's the end of radio. No, we still need both. And so we will always need books. And there's nothing better than curling up with a three-year-old on your lap with a book. It's not the same when you're curling up with a phone with that same three-year-old. There's something about the tactile experience, the reading, the smelling, the absorbing of the physical pages.
We talked a little bit about keeping the audience in mind and working for something. We don't have all your books here because they would break our table, because there's a lot of them. So what about those burdens? How do you feel about the next book that you're going to write, knowing that you're an award-winning, widely read author? What does that do when you sit down to, like, knock out the next story?
I'm terrified. It really is. And I have to, my editor is so good. And she tells me, just write the book. Don't worry about it. You know, make it the very best. And she pushes me to make everything better. She will say, when I finish a book, this is the best you've ever written. I say, oh, thank you. And your next one will be better. And so she continues to push me to make things better. And I cannot focus on awards and all of the extras that come with being a successful writer. I cannot focus on that because that totally and completely shuts me down. Oh dear, is that an award-winning word? Oh dear, this chapter wasn't good enough. Oh, the critics won't like it. I can't do that. And when I find myself doing that, and I do, I have to stop and say, okay, for example, the new book I'm working on is about a little boy. Who is this little boy? What are his problems? What are his issues? What does he need? And how can I get him to the end of this story so that other young people read the book and care about what this little boy needs? And I have to force myself to focus on that because you can get really carried away with glory. And it's not about that. It's about connecting with a kid who really does not care. Young people don't care about awards. They really don't. They care if the book is good. Ooh, that's good. They don't check to see, oh dear, does it have stickers on the front? They check to see, they read the first chapter and says, man, that's pretty good. I think I'll read chapter two. Mm-hmm. That is what I have to aim for.
Well, thank you. This is the time in the show where we have something called a speed round. It's really not about speed. It's okay. Just about a couple of words. I'm going to ask you four questions. And if you can just come up with some short phrases in here, and we'll find out what's going on inside of your mind. Longhand or computer?
Computer.
Computer. Is it laptop or do you have a desktop that you use?
Both. Okay. Mostly desktop. Laptop is only if I happen to be in a hotel.
Favorite authors right now?
Diane McKinney Whetstone. Hmm. Nobody's ever heard of her, but if I could write adult books, I would write like Diane.
Ooh, it's a secret. Do you have a finished manuscript tradition? You finish your book, okay, now this is something you do every time you finish a book.
No, but I do try to go out to dinner or do some sort of celebration. But no, I don't have a specific tradition.
Okay. And then what would you say to your younger self?
I would say, you're a writer, girl. Get started sooner.
Very nice. Well, thank you very much. And you're working on a new book now. What is it?
Yes. The title is Common Dust, and it takes place in 1963 in Cleveland, Ohio. And it is sitting unfinished on my computer.
So do you have kind of an estimated date when you hope it's going to be out?
Yesterday.
Okay, I see. So I guess everybody needs to look yesterday for that. And actually, while you're looking for that, you can check out any one of her numerous novels and books. Sharon Draper, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.